is Carol Flagg with Healthcare Now Radio, reporting from HIM 17 in Orlando. With me right now is Tom Lee, CEO and founder of SA Ignite, and Beth Houck, the VP of Client Services. How are my two favorite exhibitors doing?
We're doing great, Carol. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Carol. Glad to be here.
As most of you know, or hopefully all of you know, Tom and Beth are experts that we employ every single month for our ABCs of MIPS webinar. And that kind of leads me to my first question for you guys. Just for the benefit of everybody, we hosted our February event last week where we talked about, or Tom talked about, the common pitfalls of MIPS, six common pitfalls of MIPS. Maybe we can take a look at that list real quick.
Yeah, that'd be great. So what we talked about is, you know, first belief that there is no downside to doing the minimum in MIPS, just simply to avoid a penalty. And so one of the points we covered, for example, is that all of the MIPS scores are being publicly published by CMS. And so even if a score of 5 or 10 out of 100 avoids a penalty for this first transition year, that score will be reported publicly relative to peers nationally. So it's just sort of one thing to keep in mind when you think about what's the pro and con of doing the minimum. Just know that that score will be out there. Second thing is that a potential belief that, okay, we've avoided things like PQRS quality penalties in the past, so we don't really have to do very much differently under MIPS because a lot of it's the same measures. With MIPS, the scoring system is totally changed now. We've definitely seen examples of where measure performance was good enough to avoid a penalty in the past under past programs, but then under the MIPS quality category, which for most folks makes up 60% of the score, that quality performance, because it's benchmarked differently and calculated differently, may not mean that your quality score is going to be very good under MIPS. So kind of, there is a need to really look and re-examine at how you manage quality, how you report it. It can be very different in terms of your outcome. Third is a belief that, okay, we should just report all the quality measures and sort of be done with it. Every measure that I have data for and be done with it. And really where one of the dangers there is that CMS will be publishing all those measure values publicly, and that you may really want to be careful with, you know, of not having the chance to really do as well as you would like to on all those measures and reporting more than you really need to. The other part of that is that the more that you really submit into CMS, that also increases the possibility that you could be audited on some of those measures that you may or may not be paying that much attention to. So generally what we're hearing is trying to keep control over, okay, what are the six measures, for example, that you really want to put your best foot forward. Be a little more conscious of that. The fourth thing is really on the meaningful use side. So we've seen organizations that have had very high meaningful use compliance rates in the past, but because meaningful use in MIPS, which has been renamed ACI, right? Is being scored differently, it's similar to what we said in the quality category, that you could actually have a relatively low ACI score even if you've had 95% plus compliance in the past because it's scored differently. So it's another thing to kind of re-examine, make sure you're going to be okay on that. And the fifth there is, you know, there's a significant number of Medicare shared savings track one ACOs out there. By far the vast majority of the advanced payment model entities are track one ACOs. And for a lot of the organizations that participated in ACO, they may believe that the ACO is just going to take care of MIPS for them because they all have a MIPS reporting responsibility. But what it turns out is that there's certain areas, and ACI is actually one area, where many ACOs still need the participating groups of that ACO to each individually report for ACI on their own out of whatever EHR they have. And a lot of organizations may not realize that they now have to take on that responsibility themselves and not just believe by default that the ACO will take care of everything. Okay, and so that's, people are sort of waking up to that operational reality. And then the last piece is that it's interesting is that we've actually encountered a number, increasingly large number of organizations that are actually in an advanced APM. So by way of reminder, an advanced APM is the one, are ones that if you have sufficient participation in that model, you will get a 5% Part B, Medicare Part B bonus, and then you will be exempt from MIPS. But what we're hearing from all of these organizations is that they still want to know what their MIP score is because they may not be sure if they, you know, they want to stay in that model. They want to know what does their alternative universe look like if they had been in MIPS or if they were to go and transition to MIPS. The other part is that the organizations are telling us that they anticipate the MIP score may be used in many different ways outside of just for the governmental reasons, because it will be the most pervasive physician score in the market, with over 600,000 providers predicted to have that score within 18 months from now. And there's various other areas of healthcare operations where the MIP score could be used that have nothing to do with macro. And we're hearing that from the commercial payer side too. So this idea that, oh, an advanced APM, I can totally forget about MIPS, is something that is worth re-examining, because we're kind of seeing really a movement in the opposite direction of that. It's like we still have to understand MIPS, even though we may not technically have to report on it right now, but at least understand it and maybe even track some of it. Those are really the six things that we covered.
That's a really great segue, because we get this question a lot in our monthly webinar. You know, do I, under Pick Your Own Path, under the Quality Payment Program, do I go APM, do I go MIPS? Are they mutually exclusive? Can I move from one to the other? Can I do both? You know, that's a very common question, and at least the work that we do together, and I'm sure you hear it from your clients.
Yeah, we do, and I think the biggest takeaway is that it is not a binary choice. In other words, there are definitely scenarios where you can be participating in an advanced APM, but you actually still have formal MIPS responsibilities and eligibility. So here, I'll give you an example. CMS has something that's called an APM participation snapshot schedule. Okay, what that means is if you have an advanced APM entity, let's say it's a next generation ACO, okay, and it's sort of CPC plus, pick your favorite advanced APM that is otherwise excluded from MIPS. If in a given year you have clinicians that join that entity after August 31st of that year, in other words, in the last one third of the year, which is a significant portion of the year,
yeah, sure.
Think about if you hire a new clinician or a large organization buys a practice, all those clinicians, although for operational reasons they're part of that advanced APM entity, from a CMS standpoint, they have to do full MIPS for that entire first year. Okay, so that's a big window at the end of the year. A lot of organizations don't realize that. And so again, it kind of lends to what I said before, is that there's sort of this in-between situation where you got to really, for at least some period of time, look at not only your advanced APM responsibility, but also what's happening on the MIPS side, because you could have some MIPS exposure there. And there's a couple other examples like that, but that's one I think that we see very common in the field, is people sort of realizing that and saying, oh, you know, that's got some implications for me,
right.
Even though I'm in an advanced APM.
Right. So speaking, sort of turning to MIPS, we're obviously started reporting in January of this year. So what are your recommendations or best practices for providers who are in the midst of reporting their first year of MIPS 2017?
So I think what's really easy to do, I have two recommendations, one being a very high level recommendation and the second one being super tactical. So at a high level, I think it's tempting to kind of take a wait and see approach and kind of, say, hey, the government has kind of muted the program overall in 2017. We don't have to do much. We don't have to think about it too much. And I guess I would make the recommendation that you need to jump in with both feet. This is not going away. Value-based programs are here to stay. And kind of waiting to do that embracing can potentially have negative impacts later on when the incentives and penalties are actually quite a bit higher. The second piece of advice, and it's probably not the most popular one based on what I hear a lot with different people coming by the booth, and that is you need to spend some time investing in your ECQMs. So one of the things we hear a lot is that people, it's a lot of overhead and work sometimes to configure those ECQMs in your EHR. Some people don't don't trust the data, that the ECQMs are being calculated in the way that they would expect. But really, the way that this program is configured is such that you're going to get bonus points for doing end-to-end e-reporting, so it's worth it from that standpoint. But secondly, it's worth it because it has, as of all the reporting methods, it has the highest percentage of benchmarks and lowest percentage of topped-out measures. And those two characteristics can really impact what your overall MIPS score ends up to be in the quality category. So for those reasons, you know, whether it's a lot of manpower or whether it's a lot of influencing of your EHR vendor to improve the data that they're giving you, it's going to be worth your effort because that's something that's not going away.
Yeah, don't take so liberally the CMS pick your own pace. But you know, procrastination is not picking your own pace.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
and then
right.
Pace, close attention to the clinical quality measures.
That's absolutely right, Carol. Yeah, don't necessarily take that as literally as it's as it's written on the website, right?
Right.
I also saw recently that you launched a new product, Ignite MIPS. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, we're very, very excited. So anybody that followed us through the MU days knows that we really automated meaningful use program management end to end, and so the same issue or same pain exists for our clients now, but now it's MIPS, so it's almost, you know, meaningful use times three for each of the three categories. So the Ignite MIPS platform allows you to manage all of the categories of MIPS and allows you to manage and monitor your performance on each of those categories for all of your providers. And then on top of all of that, it applies a lot of different kinds of analytics to ensure that you're both picking the best method for reporting as well as the best measures for reporting. And there's a lot of data and regulatory knowledge that goes on behind the scenes in order to make that happen, but we really simplify it for you so that we help you make the right decisions at the right time.
Well, as always, Beth, Tom, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And this is Carol Flagg with another HIMSS Highlight.